The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Tuesday, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really good. It was a great weekend. Hope everybody had just a happy Easter and just tons of fun. I know that I did, but we missed Earth Day.
No, we didn't. Miss is a big word.
Oh, okay.
I didn't celebrate it, but I didn't miss anything.
Well, I mean, we weren't on the air for Earth Day, and so we must remember, because every Earth Day we must play this by popular request.
Yeah, all right.
And this goes back, I don't know, how far does this go back? 15 years, maybe?
Yeah, somewhere around
15
there.
Years, the Earth First audio out there.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were praying and crying for the trees.
Deep in the woods of North Carolina, an extremist eco-group called Earth First bewails the violation of American nature.
I want to mourn the loss of all the old growth trees I've seen, and tell them that we love them and that we don't want them to die, that there are some people here who do care. So I want you to know that, trees, that we care.
I think we are deeply hurting in America. I think we are deeply craving answers. I think that we've lost our identity as we have evolved into technology and into industrialized society. Bring me to this cathedral. Bring me to those guys. Bring me to this rock that has the most incredible life. That makes me feel alive.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest,
here,
and
I
felt outraged, but I didn't scream and I didn't cry.
Here we go.
And I need to.
Yes. Hope everybody had just a great Earth Day. And I remember the first Earth Day where we had to go out. We had to go out. I was in junior high school, and we had to actually go out. And house to house, I never forget going to the one house, the first house we went to, knocked on the door.
Yeah.
Guy comes out, we're here because of Earth Day. Get out of here.
You kids get off my lawn.
Get off.
You're trampling the grass.
Well, the thing that we always, we have the video of that Earth First.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm looking at, as we're playing it, we're looking at the actual video.
Uh-huh.
And what we immediately noticed is, number one, a rock does not have life, when she talked about that. But the other point was, they're stomping on the grass.
Yeah.
They're concerned with the trees, but they have absolutely no concern about the grass and the other plants on the forest floor that they're stomping all over. They have no care or worries about their lives at all.
What about the weeds that they have been smoking?
You're right.
They didn't have any care for the weeds.
Right.
Someone must care for the weeds.
Smoking pot kills plants.
And plants feel pain. We must all remember this.
Remember that, though. I remember doing that story.
You know,
1991, the first story came out, 91, 92, where they did the university study that they said plants feel pain.
Ironically enough, the people doing that study were high. True story. Prove that it isn't true.
So we got a great show ahead.
We do.
Did you see de Blasio talking about, you know, no more steel and glass skyscrapers in New York?
Yeah, right.
So you plan on, you plan on expanding, like here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, plan on expanding out?
Well, the good news is they already have a head start on people living in Central Park, so...
But,
They can go live in the park.
How far? I mean, you can't grow then.
Yeah, no, you can't.
How do you grow in New York City if you don't build up?
Well, it's the very reason they had to build up because they had no more land,
right?
And so you limit all the space. Oh, that's definitely gonna bring the rent down.
And if you wish to build these buildings, we're going to make it so cost prohibitive that you'll have to move to Texas.
That's right.
Woo-hoo! Well, he didn't say that, but the only reason I bring that up is when I saw the story yesterday, and it is mind-boggling when you think that in the time that I have been here in Texas this time, which will be 19 years and a couple of weeks, that just the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the population has increased by almost 2 million people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you think about that, you realize how, not the state, we're talking about just a city. And Houston, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Two cities, you're talking about roughly, you know, and maybe a little bit below, I'm estimating it, but probably a little under 4 million people in just two cities in 19 years. Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about four cities of a size of a million people that have moved to just two cities in Texas.
Right.
In 19 years.
What is that, roughly four Buffaloes?
That would be four Western New York areas.
Yeah.
That would be because you would take if you took the, as they call it, the greater Western New York area, which would be including Buffalo and Niagara Falls.
Okay.
That would be the Erie and Niagara County, which is roughly that. They're not even a million. I think they're like 900 and something thousand.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you take four major cities and put them into two cities. But why are they coming down? But when you think about it, Does de Blasio, I mean, are there companies, after the whole Amazon thing, you have to ask this question, after the whole Amazon thing, did de Blasio just go, to hell with it? we're not going to be growing anymore. We know we're not going to be growing anymore. So why not pretend that we're environmentally, you know, concerned?
Right. Well, I think you have to, if you're in de Blasio's position, I think you have to include all of the everything that's been part of their narrative all along, even if you're the mayor of the largest city in the country. You have to do that. You got to play the liberal line. You got to pretend like you're against growth, or you just have to be against growth. And it may sound absurd, but even if you're the mayor of the largest city, you got to be pro-growth, upward onward.
You would think.
It's not a contest. You're not trying to outdo the number two city. You're just trying to do better than you did yesterday. You're trying to bring more prosperity. Oh, no, you can't do that either.
No. You can't do that as a liberal mayor anymore. Can you? And this gets us into another question. When we look at the 2020 election coming up, and the problem that Democrats have, you know, you have de Blasio out there saying, really telling his constituents, his city, look, we can't really grow. And if we grow, it's going to be so expensive that really companies will wish to move elsewhere.
Right.
That's the message that we're sending. We saw the Amazon message that was also sent. Sorry, we don't want you. So growth, economic growth, is not part of their platform.
Right.
Now, if it is, it's simply what we always hear, which is investment in the infrastructure, which means their idea of growth is taking money, taxpayer dollars, and government spending it however they wish to spend it, not necessarily for economic growth to help the private sector go, because that was the whole Amazon, you know, problem, but just redistribute the income, and that will make our economy go. And I started thinking about it, you know, when you got Bernie Sanders out there. Think about the message that the Democrats were selling just this past weekend, just yesterday. Bernie Sanders doing, was it the town hall? Was it CNN, I believe it was?
Mm-hmm.
where he's talking about, he was asked the question on criminals. Should felons, should the Boston bomber, should the Boston bomber and should people that have commit rapes and sexual assault be able to vote, and the sexual assault, you know, to be able to vote and vote on issues that might affect women's safety. And so he went on for the first minute or so blaming Republicans for everything and then basically came back and answered the question, yes. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, you're not going to win. You don't win that.
No.
You don't win support. No. You don't have independents saying, well, doggone it, I just realized Bernie Sanders is for the Boston bomber and for rapist voting. My God, I've got to vote for him.
It's about time.
It's about time. We need this. This is what we as Democrats need to promote this. We're certainly going to get the independent vote by supporting that.
No longer do we have to march and protest with signs that say, please let these violent offenders vote. I'm so glad that my work has led to something.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, and those are just two things that hit me yesterday. There's de Blasio on national TV publicly saying, look, we're not going to grow here. You know, we're going to embrace the Green New Deal. We're going to embrace insanity. And then, you know, Bernie Sanders and the way, well, we'll play the audio coming up because the way that she asked the question, you're like, whoa, how's he going to answer this? Mm-hmm. And he answered it the only way that he can, being in favor for it, which is filibustering the first minute until he figured a way to say yes, but such a long time after the original question was asked that he was hoping that it might be soft-sold a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I was able to soft-sell that a little bit because I didn't answer the question until I filibustered for about a minute and a half. But still it comes out with the same thing. Yes, the Boston bomber and rapist and felons who have committed sexual assault should be able to vote, even if it does affect policy for safety of women. It's just like, wow, you're not going to win. You're not going to win over extra votes. In fact, you're going to turn off Democrats who say, oh, really? You know, look, I'm pretty progressive. But yeah, the way you phrase that question, even the liberal symbolism in the way that she asked the question was huge.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sure.
Which was, what about women's rights? But we know now that Democrats don't care about women's rights because transgender rights now supersedes women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
So they think about this. Think about how the Democrats, just in a couple of years, have basically said women's rights means nothing anymore. They support the Women's March, but now the Women's March has even been split up because they can't decide. The Democrats can't decide. Look, we got to have a meeting here. Everybody get in here. Bring in some coffee. Make sure it's organically, and what's the other thing grown? It's organically, and then there's something else, too.
Fair trade?
Fair trade, yes. Fair trade. Thank you very much. Organically and fair trade grown coffee. Now let's discuss here, all the Democrats, let's sit down here, all the representatives. We've got to come to a decision. Do women have vaginas or not?
Mm.
And we have to come to a conclusion here. We've got to be definitive as to where we're heading in 2020. That's an important question for Democrats. Do women have vaginas?
Okay, who has their hat? Put it on now. Oh, wait, don't put it on, because that's wrong. You know, when the day after the election in 2016, we talked about this. I guess I should have imagined. I'm not sure that I did or not. It's all been such a blur. We predicted this is where it was going. But now it's beyond belief. It's unbelievable how quickly that progressed, because we said, look, by the next election, major election cycle in 2020, it will just be so fractured in the party, in the movement. All the movements will be fractured. And it has become, I guess here's what I had not considered fully. I knew it was on the way, but I hadn't considered the impact of the serious nature of it. We can have fun with it, but the serious nature of it is when you have a lesbian that is sitting on the LGBTQ council for the Baltimore mayor's office and gets kicked off because she called a he, and it turns out that that he she was referring to was a guy who said he was a woman, wanted to get moved to a women's prison, did, and committed rape. And the rapist got deference over the woman who used the wrong pronoun.
And now Bernie wants to make sure that rapist can vote.
That's right.
I understand what a serious issue it is, but the absurdity of it.
How in the world do you put all that together and make it work if you're on the left? Tell me how you make that work. You know, the Supreme Court announced that they were going to hear some cases. There's a total of three cases they're going to announce when it comes to employment rights for gays and transgenders. Two cases are going to be heard together. The third case will be heard separately. But my question is, it doesn't matter what they find at the highest court. I think there's going to be a massive objection by the LGBTQ community just by default, given what we have seen in recent months and years.
We got a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Front Eye Radio, he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Also coming up on the show, the Supreme Court, you mentioned, looking at whether non-citizens should be represented in Congress. This is the whole census question,
right,
as to whether we should just count everybody or count everybody and then separate who was a citizen versus who was not a citizen of the United States in the census. And of course we should. And as you and I said, I don't think the Democrats can win that argument either.
No.
And so we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. Oil is surging in price as the president goes after Iran exports. I was telling you during our pre-show meeting, that's fine. I understand him doing that, wanting to isolate. And we should be doing that to the world's largest exporter of terrorism. But the fact is, at this same point, he shouldn't be discussing with the Democrats, and I hope he does not continue with any conversation on raising the gasoline tax at this moment.
Well, I'm wondering if it's all part of the same discussion, because if oil prices are going up as a result of limited supply, then when is the best time to impose new taxes? When they're going up and you can point your finger at the oil companies or those other nations or anybody else.
America, really, when it comes to it, consumers don't care what the reason is. If gas prices go up too much, they'll vote a certain way.
Yeah, well,
they'll vote to stop it.
No doubt. But can you get it through in a steep, hot environment like we are now? For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Strong to severe thunderstorms and heavy to excessive rainfall will be possible across the southern high plains and much of Texas through tomorrow. Above average high temperatures are expected across much of the country this week, especially in the west, and a sturdy ridge of high pressure builds and expands across that region. For the next 7-day period, the rainfall in central Texas and much of that state will be upwards of 5 inches. The coasts, Atlantic and Pacific, won't receive much in the way of rainfall this week. As we move through your day today, we'll see an elongated frontal boundary from Michigan down through Texas, delivering, again, heavy amounts of rainfall for Texas and Oklahoma. As you move up along the front, there's an area of low pressure that'll cause some unsettled weather in that region, with the potential later today and into tomorrow for some severe weather across the states of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the goods. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Also, coming up on the show, we got so much to talk about. We'll tell you about the socialist students who promoted Breadline in a positive way. A poll on the GOP support for Medicare for All, now up to 31%. Not surprised about that at all. We have talked about the evolution of the Republicans being much more liberal, and we're talking about the rank-and-file voter. Much more of the, as we have stated before, the gimmeism party.
Yeah.
Promoting not socialism, but gimmeism. The California soda pop tax has been nixed, and the Democrats seem to back off impeachment yesterday.
Yeah. What, while they went to lunch?
Well, no, I mean, you know, the leadership doesn't want it.
No. This is the game plan. That's you know, been there for clearly for at least a few months, and that is the leadership saying no, while everybody else says yes, and keeps screaming impeachment. Scream impeachment. The others get away with it because they know that leadership is not going to pull the trigger. They're not going to move that direction, so they can, if they're running for president themselves, they can campaign on that. They can keep screaming that without ever having to get to the point of an actual vote on that.
You know, you and I talked about that. What would it be come this Thursday and Friday? What would the impeachment talk, what would the Democrats be saying? This was interesting because this goes back. I'm going to play this audio cut, and this is from this week. George Stephanopoulos was out. Martha Raddatz was filling in, and Terry Moran was there, the reporter, Terry Moran, and was asked about his analysis of all this and what it means, whether it comes to, you know, impeachment and just politically overall.
And Terry, you said about a month ago on this program that if Mueller did not have evidence to support that the president aided the Russians, that's a reckoning for the progressives and Democrats. He has been cleared of conspiracy with the Russians. But does this report leave a clear reckoning for Democrats?
Well, I think it does. Donald Trump is not going to be removed from office for this, whatever the House of Representatives does. Donald Trump's not going to be frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs. And the 2016 election is not going to be reversed by this. And too many Democrats and progressives.
But even with the obstruction of justice. But even with the obstruction of justice that he did not make a determination, Mueller.
Yes.
Still a reckoning?
A reckoning for Democrats for sure, because now that hope is dead. And as a result, they are going to go to the public, as many of the candidates already are, with an argument more than, don't you hate him too? Don't you want to get rid of him too? And I think that is a positive reckoning for Democrats.
No,
this
it isn't.
Has been an obsession. This has been something that has consumed energy, political energy in the Democratic Party and in the media as well.
And the only thing that I would disagree with them, that it's a positive for Democrats now that they can move on and talk about the issues. Like what? Felons voting?
Yeah.
Green New Deal, getting rid of skyscrapers, having non-citizens represented by, you know, in the census, open borders. Where do they actually go? The number one issue that they had behind them was their hatred for Trump and that he had committed treason. That has gone on for 2 years. That is the number one issue that they have had and depended upon. As we said Friday, and I'll say it again, go ahead. Go for impeachment. Go down that road. Go ahead.
Right.
Go. You want to go down that road? Go down that road. Go ahead.
Well, if you want to motivate the base for the president, then you should pursue that. That's something you should do. If you want to motivate, because one of the things that I guess they really haven't considered was the fact that even though he was a household name for longer than the Clintons, much longer than the Clintons in 2016, he was still the underdog. Go ahead and keep going after this president, and you'll make him an even greater underdog, because it's one thing to go after him, you know, based on nothing in terms of the 2016 campaign, which was just his words. Now it's nothing in a legal setting, a huge nothing being the Mueller report. So you want to take that and launch something all over again that hasn't worked for you for the last 2 years in an effort to try and remove him from office. Go for it. If you want to make this president an underdog like he's never been, then that will do it. That will motivate his base and likely grow his base.
Well, why do you think the Democrat leadership doesn't want to go down that path?
They know.
They know. Look, I understand. Politically, I understand why some Democrats want to do this. I do think that some Democrats, probably, you know, Adam Schiff, for example, understands what is coming next.
Right.
That you have the investigation coming up on the Obama administration now. And there has been tons of talks. I told you that, you know, just checking out George Papadopoulos's Twitter page yesterday. And some of the things that he was writing, he did that op-ed piece for the Wall Street Journal over the weekend and said, spine? Yeah, there was spine. You want to find the spine? And in the Wall Street Journal editorial, he mentioned, you know, the three different, the professors and the other two individuals involved in contacting him. And he said, they all worked for the FBI. They were all informants of the FBI. They were spying on me.
Yeah.
But the most interesting thing that came out over the weekend, I thought, was Papadopoulos. And remember, they said Papadopoulos was the reason that this whole thing happened.
Yeah.
The investigation started on that July 31st because of Papadopoulos talking, to the one diplomat about the fact that he had heard that there, you know, that they could get the emails on Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Democrats, because remember, it was the whole Carter Page FISA warrant, and they said, no, it was this. Well, George Papadopoulos points to part of the Mueller report that says, right here, because it's a question you and I have asked, finally, the office investigated, this is from the Mueller report, on whether one of the above campaign advisors, George Papadopoulos, acted as an agent of or at the direction and control of the government of Israel. While the investigation revealed significant ties between Papadopoulos and Israel, and this is the important point, in parentheses, and search warrants were obtained in part on that basis, end of quote. The office ultimately determined that the evidence was not sufficient to obtain and sustain a conviction under FARA or Section 951. And Papadopoulos then writes, and this is just yesterday, this is 12 hours ago, get ready for confirmation that the previous administration was spying on both me and the Israelis, and a FISA warrant was issued. You and I have asked this question with all the unmasking that was done. And we talk about the former UN ambassador, Samantha Power, who they said had unmasked dozens or hundreds of different top secret conversations between members of the Trump administration and, you know, whomever, you know, they had were surveilling them on. And we said, how could that be when there was just seemed to be one FISA warrant on Carter Page and that was it? How much did Carter Page have for Samantha Power to be doing all of this? And you and I have always asked the question, were there more FISA warrants issued that we don't know about?
Right.
George Papadopoulos says yes. And then later on, within that same hour, he wrote, here you go here. Now, this is really important. When the president declassifies the FISAs that were on both myself and Michael Flynn, all the pundits who fell for the July 31st investigation launch date and keep repeating it should be fired. The target was both Flynn and me by at the latest 2015. More to come.
That's what really raised our eyebrows there, is that, all right, why would that have gone back so far? At the latest 2015. Why would that have gone back so far? He was not the presumptive nominee. We've asked the question, too. Is there evidence of any other major or any other candidate on the Republican side getting the same kind of treatment.
Rand Paul said he believes he was being monitored. Remember that, right?
Right.
Was it Rand Paul?
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was Rand Paul.
Then you take from that, because here's the thing. If people who ended up being part of the Trump campaign or Trump transition team were being monitored in 2015.
That changes everything.
Well, it changes it in a huge way because it tells you that the scope of this entire thing, we may be just seeing not even the tip of the iceberg. My question is, were they monitoring beyond? Was every candidate getting the same kind of treatment?
And so I have to ask the question, are there some Democrats that know this, that's screaming that we got to keep impeachment on the table, we have to keep suspicion on Donald Trump, even if we're losing some in the public, because what's coming down the pike about what Democrats did is going to kill us? So we need to keep the suspicion on the president. I have to ask that question.
Well, we've seen certainly the attack that continues on the attorney general. And I believe that's because they know what's coming down. They know what his investigation is going to point to.
And then Papadopoulos, late last week, wrote, "The Russia probe started with the spies who marked me. The attorney general should question the three men." And he points out who the men are, and it's well known. He goes, "Operatives is a term for these men. Spies are a more fitting label. One is Stefan Helper, the professor at the University of Cambridge who runs intelligence seminars and has ties to the Central Intelligence Agency. The Washington Post named him as the FBI informant who approached at least three members of the Trump campaign. Then there's Alexander Downer, who had this lofty title of Australian High Commissioner to the UK and was advisor to the British private intelligence firm Hecklut & Company. Then there's Joseph Massoud, who taught at Rome's Link Campus University, where many faculty members have ties to intelligence agencies. All these three men spied on me. As spies, they hid behind the cloak of their public personas while trying to ferret out information about the campaign in Moscow and prod me into cooperating their bad intelligence. Major newspapers have confirmed that Halper reported to the FBI and Mr. Downer reported to Australian intelligence. Mr. Massoud's handlers remain unidentified. I've had spent 2 years thinking about my bizarre interactions with these spooks. If Mr. Barr really wants to understand what happens, he needs to examine them and their motives. If he does, he will likely find three men and their government backers acting in concert to inflict damage on a U.S. presidential candidate whose views apparently scared the hell out of them." What might have motivated these spying efforts on the British side? Mr. Trump was a vocal proponent of Brexit, which was opposed by most British political establishment. Similarly, Mr. Trump had spoken out against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade agreement that Australian politicians support. Wow. In the U.S., Obama appointees James Comey at the FBI and John Brennan at the CIA were deeply rattled by Mr. Trump's rhetoric about restoring relations with Russia. They were also hoodwinked by poorly sourced, unvetted reports from overseas, including the Steele dossier. Their agency stitched together the reports to create the collusion narrative and open up the investigation. Mr. Barr may not be able to find a smoking gun that definitively proves Obama loyalists plotted to use specious allegations to wound a Republican candidate for president, but he won't have to look very hard to confirm the existence of a spy operation. Subpoenas for the spies who approached me would go a long way. Interesting to see where this is going.
Yeah, it is.
And where this will go.
Well, and how much we will learn. We wondered about that when the White House sent it over to the Inspector General's office, exactly what will be learned from that. But I think it was a brilliant move because the IG has full access to the Justice Department, and we'll see where it goes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We got tons of audio coming up here today.
All right.
That's what happens when we have a long weekend.
Yeah, we did. I hope everyone had a great Easter.
Did you have a good Easter?
I did. Did you?
It was great. I got to hang out with family and old friends. Had a great reunion with friends that I hadn't seen in 30 years. So, I mean, it was really, 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 really a great time.
Good. Good.
And interesting to see how some New Yorkers were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to one New Yorker, talked to a guy at the airport that I know, that I just always assumed was, you know, he gets a kick out of what was going on, but didn't think he liked Trump. And when I talked to him, I said, well, you know, when you think about Trump, the actual issues, forget about the things he says, the issues, he's quite moderate. He looked at me and he said, and I'm almost positive this guy's a lifelong Democrat. He said, well, I think you're absolutely right. People should consider the things that he's talking about. All of a sudden he got serious with me, and I went, really interesting.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here. You ready? I want to play some audio.
All right.
Okay,
what do you got?
This is from the Bernie Sanders town hall. Okay.
All right.
On CNN, and this question was asked. Here we go.
Senator Sanders, you have said that you believe that people with felony records should be allowed to vote while in prison. Does this mean that you would support enfranchising people like the Boston Marathon bomber, a convicted terrorist and murderer? Do you think that those convicted of sexual assault should have the opportunity to vote for politicians who could have a direct impact on women's rights?
Okay, thank you for the question. And let me just say this.
Okay, before we get to it, the next minute is him hitting on Republicans before he actually answers the question,
mm-hmm.
which has nothing to do with the actual question.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. All right.
What our campaign is about and what I believe is creating a vibrant democracy. Today, as you may know, we have one of the lowest voter turnouts of any major country on earth. I want to see us have one of the highest voter turnouts. And by the way, what we're seeing is more young people getting involved in the political process, but not enough. And in my view, if young people voted at the same percentage that older people voted in this country, we would transform this nation. But to get to your point, we live in a moment where cowardly Republican governors are trying to suppress the vote.
To answer your question, is he answering her question?
I haven't heard an answer to her question
yet.
Okay,
let's continue. He eventually does, but when he prefaced it with, to answer your question, cowardly Republican governors, I don't think she even mentioned Republicans in this at all. Here we go. All
right. And in fact, right here, as you may know, in New Hampshire, the legislature and the governor are working hard to make it more difficult for young people to vote. And to me, that is an incredibly undemocratic, un-American process. And I say to those people, by the way, if you don't have the guts to participate in free and fair elections, you should get another job and get out of politics. All right? So we got to...
All right, so there's the clapping for what? What's he talking about?
I don't know. I haven't heard an answer yet to her question.
Do you have any idea? I have no idea what he is actually asking about here. Hang on, if you could lower my volume here for a second, I'd
all
appreciate
right.
that, because I had some problems with the audio cut, but we'll get back to it here in just a couple of seconds. But as to that point, he never answered the question, but brought up Republicans, but still never answered the question as to whether he would actually vote that way or not. I want to get back to what he was actually talking about, though. Let's get back to more of it, and we'll play it in its entirety.
Here but difficult for young people to vote. And to me, that is an incredibly undemocratic, un-American process. process. And I say to those people, by the way, if you don't have the guts to participate in free and fair elections, you should get another job and get out of politics. All right? So we got to... So here is, and to answer your question, as it happens in my own state of Vermont, from the very first days of our state's history, what our Constitution says is that everybody can vote. That is true. So people in jail can vote. Now, here is my view. If somebody commits a serious crime, sexual assault, murder, they're going to be punished. They may be in jail for 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, their whole life. That's what happens when you commit a serious crime. But I think the right to vote is inherent to our democracy. Yes, even for terrible people.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, they should. You're not going to win that argument with the American public.
No, you're not.
I love how he hit, though, about that. You know, who was in for fair and free elections? Which Republicans are not for fair and free elections? Who's promoting that?
Well, it's the same lie, this false narrative that they've been on for many years, that the Republicans who have been in the recent years have been trying to promote voter ID laws. Tell me how that's not fair.
Right.
They tell you it's not fair.
To ensure that there's not voter fraud. How come Democrats always claim that they want fair elections, but they don't want to be able to monitor who votes?
Right.
You can't win this argument, and they're attempting to win it, but he's trying to win that argument that yes, and you're not going to win that with the American public. They're not going to buy into that. But those questions are asked.
Yep.
And will be asked, and we'll play more of that coming up here in just a little bit because they didn't end there. There were other questions that also were asked about socialism not succeeding. And I saw a ton of different articles over the weekend that, yeah, he's the front runner. He is the front runner.
Mm-hmm.
That Sanders is the front runner.
Right.
That he is the socialist with experience.
Yeah.
And you notice now how he's talking about he's for democracy, 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 democracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, right. The where it's, you know, the energy for Bernie hasn't changed. But I think the support for a lot of those ideas has. If you think about what 2016 was for him, it was on the tailwinds of Occupy Wall Street. Mm-hmm. It was a new generation hearing something for free. That's where that Bernie thing started. That's really what gave him the steam in 2016 that he had never had before. It's not just enough to offer free stuff. You're going to have to get into talking about other ideas. That's where it gets tough. We talked about recently, all right, you can look at the theory that a lot of people, more people today, want more free stuff. They don't care about deficit spending. They don't care about racking up national debt. They clearly don't care about national debt. So there's, I think, a sound theory that someone like a Bernie appeals to them, even if they know full well he's not going to get Medicare for All. But maybe he gets me a little bit more that I don't have to pay for. That kind of appeal is there, no doubt. But when you start talking about the other ideas about socialism and how it punishes success instead of rewards, then you start having a different consideration.
We go to Kenneth in Tennessee. Kenneth, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
How you guys doing tonight?
Very good.
All right. Well, since we're on the thing with Bernie Sanders and all that, what the Democrats are looking to do is it's a vote grab, okay? What we have in the United States is you have a policy where no convicted felons can vote. What he's looking to do and what other Democrats are looking to do is, by allowing convicted felons to vote, it's a blanket allowance, okay? It's like he said, it will allow also those who are convicted of the heinous crimes. But what it will also allow is those who are convicted of lesser crimes that are convicted.
We understand.
For, sure.
We understand completely. But, we're talking about the politics that you can't win that with the American public.
But it's not the American public they're trying to appeal to. It's the American youth that they're trying to appeal to. Because what we're seeing today in more of the hard-nosed states that are Republican ran, that are take a especially a heavy stance on, let's use drug convictions as an example, okay? Since we got this major movement across the United States for legalizing marijuana, you have a large population of people who has been convicted for things like possession charges and stuff like that. If you allow those convicted felons to vote, now you're giving these people an opportunity to have a voice that they didn't have since they had their conviction. It goes right along the lines with the Democrat narrative. Now you're going to see when they're
You're not trying to convince Democrats. You're trying to convince the independent. And even the independent voter, when you ask that question that way, is not going to be for it. You're not going to win that with independents. That's who you're trying to win, not Democrat young people. You're trying to win independents. And the majority of Americans, I guarantee, when asked that question the way that she asked it, and that's how we're prefacing it, how it was asked in that setting, you're not going to win that argument with the American public. You're going to win it with some, but you're not going to win it with the majority.
No, you're not. No, there isn't this huge outcry in that direction. There isn't.
Right.
It comes from where?
The far left. Remember, the vast majority of young people don't have felony convictions for drugs. They may have misdemeanors. They may have violations. The vast majority do not have felonies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, felonies gets into a point where you're doing more. Let's put it this way: if you're getting into felonies with a lot of different drug crimes, your probably number one issue is not voting in the next election either.
No. That has clearly come from. The left, the Democratic Party, the far left of the Democratic Party, looking to build a voter base. I mean, let's face it. If you had Bernie's plan, well, even while behind bars, they would all be taken down the hall to vote.
And we understand the fact that, yeah, Democrats are trying to sell it. Well, low-level drug offenders should be able to vote. That's not how that young person asked the question and sold it.
Right.
And that was a young person who asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
And how that young person asked that question identified with many people, the Boston bomber and then rapist, who can then vote for politicians that may make decisions on women's issues. Yeah, I'll ask that question. Was that a Republican plant?
Sure.
It doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
It's the question was asked, and he loses on that big time.
Yeah, you're not going to win that. You're not going to win that. You can have a discussion, I think, in the general population about changing sentencing laws. But when you get to the questions, the way they were asked in this setting, and the way it was answered by Bernie, that's a loser every single time. This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
If you'd like to get in, lines open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on driver distraction. We've all been there. You're driving, you need a snack or a drink, so you reach across to the passenger seat or to the cup holder next to you to satisfy that thirst or hunger. The action seems harmless. You've probably done this 1,000 times before. But now, you're officially distracted. Any activity that temporarily takes your eyes off the road or a hand off the wheel might be the first step in what could devolve into a serious accident. Before resuming your journey, before getting behind the wheel, fuel up. Not just your truck, but also your body. Work snack breaks into your schedule so you can pull over first. Don't risk an accident over a craving. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently, is Freightliner's number one goal.
You know, Dershowitz. Bernie Sanders. I was listening to a Dershowitz audio that I'm going to play coming up on the bottom of the hour, so it was on my mind. But Sanders was also asked the question, look, socialism's failed everywhere. Why would you do it? And he says, well, he's for Democrat socialism, not for the socialism that existed in the Soviet Union, which is totalitarian socialism. But as we all know, once you get the, and this is the, as we've talked about before, what he calls Democrat socialism is the current state now where you have, where you move away from a constitutional republic, where you move away from a republic where you have the tyranny of the majority controlling the minority. Because that's the whole point of why we're not a direct democracy. We're a republic, so the majority cannot take the rights away from the minority. Mm-hmm. That was the fear of the founding fathers because they had seen it happen, and their fear was, for example, what you see in Venezuela, which is a democracy, a government under a democracy that eventually becomes a totalitarian regime and evolves that way because of the fact of when you move to socialism and the government controls more of the capital, the money is in public hands, in government hands. They get the power. It's not in private hands anymore. And that's the evolution of it. Of course, it wasn't a debate back and forth between the person who asked the question and Bernie Sanders. But the question was asked and it got applause.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a young woman whose family came from the Soviet Union. But the fact is, that's on CNN, and those questions are actually being addressed. And as we pointed out earlier, a number of questions were being asked that are tough for him to answer, and tough for any Democrat to answer right now.
Yeah. I think that it is, it's this kind of this open field now with Democrats, because so many splintered groups have come from what they have created over the years. Who knows what they'll focus on? I mean, you go back to Howard Dean and the whole, who thought that would derail? Who would have predicted that would have derailed a presidential campaign? Really? And he was the guy at the moment. And he had the momentum. So now let's fast forward to 2019, 2020, and try and, in our minds, envision what the next, I guess, trolling moment will be for the far left. Bernie will poll high. But does he have, can he hold the same energy and answer the new questions about socialism and his beliefs and still survive it long term?
Well,
I suspect
in his response, it was just the normal sayings that we hear. Mm-hmm. I believe that the government should be responsive, yes, to not just the top 1%, but to all working Americans.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell does that mean?
Right.
How?
Well, he's throwing out this populism, these populism slogan lines that have been out there for how long now? They're old. Yeah, I know he is too.
But well, that's what gives him street cred.
But this is the other side of it too.
Socialist street cred.
Right. But when you start talking about the details of it, it's one thing to go out and say, your health care is going to be free. Your college is going to be free. That appeals. Yeah, but what's the other side of that? You know, in 2008, I guess the birth of the idea of Obamacare, and then getting into 2009 and 2010, a lot of lies had to be told along the way. And people were willing to believe the lies. I don't think they're just automatically believing the lies anymore. And why is that? I think it's in part because of the failure of the last administration, the many failures of the last administration. And I don't mean the failures of the things they tried to get done and didn't get done. I mean, the promises they made to their side, their rank and file that they didn't deliver on, what their rank and file sees as failures. How many times have we heard it? Well, Obama didn't really get anything done for us. That's been repeated time and time again.
Well, we did see Elizabeth Warren, though, talking, you know, really going for the financial juggler, talking about, you know, forgiving $50,000 of college loans or below, which I believe the total costs are looking at. I saw one of it estimated $650 billion.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to pass Congress.
Sure. I bet it will.
But go big.
Yep.
As we stated, go big. And if you're going to do it, if you're going to be a socialist, go big. Promise the world.
Yeah.
And that's what
you might
doing.
As well.
Yeah.
Listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios.
And he is Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara, 86690 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Go to our website, redeyeradioshow.com, keyword podcast. You can check out our daily podcast. If you click the on demand tab, it'll take you straight there. And every day, if you miss a show, part of a show, it's there for you. Every day you can go and listen to Red Eye Radio. And if you want to share that with friends, that's even better. Please do that. RedEyeRadioShow.com, keyword podcast. Check out the Extra Mile podcast, telling some interesting stories of the people behind the wheel of big rigs, the trucking industry, leading experts, some great advice on the Extra Mile podcast. All there at our website, RedEyeRadioShow.com. Also, you can subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. So go to redeyeradioshow.com, keyword podcast.
Yeah, I was showing my 93-year-old dad how to use the app the other day.
Yeah, awesome.
I said, see, Dad, look at this. Look how quick it takes.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, all this computer stuff. And I said, come on, you're on the computer now. You can look at the app here on my phone and look how quickly. There it is.
Yeah.
I said, there, nice. I go, there it is. And I went, here you go. Let me hit the app. Boom.
Yeah.
Hit the app, and then it was a couple of seconds. I said, okay, there it is, hour number one of the last show. Hit it. Boom. Within 5 seconds, it's on.
Nice.
Because that's real easy. I was like, yeah, it is. By the way, the other thing is, when I was talking to Dad the other day, and we were talking about, you know, the whole Russian collusion.
Mm-hmm.
Dad understood apparently he's, you know, he reads, he pays attention, listens to some talk radio, not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got into the whole Russian collusion thing, he even said to me, he said, but when you look at it, the Democrats are actually the ones colluding with the Russians. You know, I was watching and listening to the audio of Scarborough yesterday talking about, you know, when you had Giuliani come out and say, there's nothing wrong with getting information from the Russians, which my response was, shut up. But the fact is, how the Trump team should be responding all the time is, excuse me, it was the Democrats who got information from the Russians to try to destroy my campaign. That's how they should phrase everything.
Right.
And, you know, Scarborough here is the Trump team setting the precedent that if it would be okay for China to give Bernie dirt on Pence. Well, the Kremlin gave the Democrats dirt on Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And they ignored as if it never happened. And my dad said, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, okay, it's getting through. Mm-hmm. People are now starting to understand what happened. I want to play this audio cut. Like I said, tons of audio to play today from over the weekend. But this was Alan Dershowitz on Fox News' media buzz with Howard Kurtz and asking him, you know, what grade he would give the media and how he is feeling now. And the fact that they didn't want him on CNN. And he makes the case. He goes, look, I used to be on all the time. And when I started pointing out and looking at what was going on with Trump as a law professor.
Right.
And not a partisan. They wanted nothing to do with me. They didn't want my opinion. Whose opinion did they want all the time? Avenatti's.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes a case, and here's part of that interview yesterday.
So throughout this investigation, when you frequently did defend the president, your integrity was intact. Critics wrote you off as a kind of a Trump shill. You even said that you were shunned by some of your former friends last summer in Martha's Vineyard. How do you feel now?
Well, I think I've always tried to be objective. I'm neutral. I'm nonpartisan when it comes to analyzing the law. And every single one of the predictions I've made over the past 2 years has come true. I predicted, for example, this report would be very critical of the president, but would not find evidence of either collusion, illegal collusion, or obstruction of justice. I made probably a dozen predictions over the years. Every one of them has been true because I'm not any smarter than anybody else, but I don't let my politics influence my legal analysis. I don't allow wishful thinking to substitute for careful legal analysis. And what happened as the result of that is that, for example, CNN, which used to have me on all the time, on Anderson Cooper, on Como, on Lemon, as an analyst, as a centrist analyst, decided, no, no, it's okay to have extreme Trump supporters because people just use them as kind of stick figure exhibits. And then everybody else will do the narrative of CNN. What they didn't want was a centrist liberal who went against their narrative. So,
but let me jump in here. Do you know, you've said that the CNN president Jeff Zucker essentially ordered you banned after you took these positions. But do you know that for a fact or is that a supposition?
No, I do know that for a fact. I've been told that by several people within CNN. He told me the opposite when I met him in the elevator one day, and I asked him, how come I'm not on anymore? And he said, oh, no, you'll be on. But since the summer, I have never been on a single time. I've been on, you know, all the other networks repeatedly, but clearly they made a decision. They did not want my kind of analysis. You know, they had a choice. They had a choice of a Harvard law professor for 50 years who's been getting it right, who's a centrist liberal and who has credibility, or Michael Avenatti. And they picked Michael Avenatti. In fact, one night I remember getting a call from CNN saying, oh, we have to cancel you. We have Avenatti. He's coming on tonight.
Yeah.
And he became their go-to guy. And every one of his predictions turned out to be false.
Not to mention that he's in a bit of legal trouble himself.
Put that aside.
Okay.
Because he's presumed innocent. But he promised
Absolutely.
Us that Trump would be out of office soon and that his lawsuit would be the downfall of Trump and all of that. He was proved wrong on every occasion. I really think the networks have to be held accountable for their predictions. I would love to see on your show or other shows just systematically showing what the pundits on the networks predicted and how they came true or not true so we can evaluate the credibility of various pundits.
We have done some of that, and let me ask you, now that the report is out and you see many journalists saying, well, you know, Mueller may have made no recommendation, but we see lots of evidence of obstruction of justice. What do you make away of the way that news organizations are covering the report now? And do you think they are influenced by any political leanings?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. The report itself is a Rorschach test. You could find in it anything you want, because there is material very, very critical of the president. In my introduction, I show how Mueller got the law completely wrong on obstruction of justice, and I lay out what the law on obstruction is. You cannot be charged with obstruction if you're the president and you simply exercise your constitutional authority to fire Comey or anyone else. I lay that out carefully. And the best precedent for that is George H.W. Bush, who pardoned Caspar Weinberger and five other people on the eve of the trial. The special prosecutor said he obstructed justice, but he couldn't be charged with it. And they never mentioned the Bush case in the Mueller report. Mueller was in the Bush administration. Barr was in the Bush administration. And they deliberately omit the Bush case as the leading precedent, which would preclude a president from being charged with obstruction for simply exercising his constitutional authority.
So, Alan, as a professor, what grade would you give the Mueller investigation? And what about your criticism that Bob Mueller, being named the special counsel, should have made the decision, should have made the call on whether or not to indict for obstruction of justice rather than essentially punting it to Attorney General Barr?
Well, in my introduction, I give grades. First, I give Mueller an incomplete, because he should have made the decision whether or not to charge with obstruction of justice. I think if he had made the decision, it would have to be that he couldn't charge for obstruction of justice, because he kind of lays out the arguments why it couldn't be possible. For example, if you have a general statute like obstruction, you can't apply it to the president under governing law unless Congress intended it to apply to the president if this could impact on his ability to govern. So He gets an incomplete on why he didn't make the decision. Mm-hmm. Then he gets a C-plus on the legal analysis of obstruction, and I gave him a B-plus on the factual analysis. The factual analysis seems fairly careful, but it should never have been released to the public. How do you distinguish him releasing to the public negative information and Comey being criticized for saying that Hillary Clinton was extremely careless?
There you go. And look, we're not. I don't have a law degree, but it was. It's pretty easy. Law shouldn't be. Law should not be an instance where the public has no idea what's going on, and it's only understood by lawyers. And it isn't. The law can be understood by somebody who is not a lawyer. And obviously, as we have stated all along, when it came to collusion, we never saw any evidence because we didn't even know what the allegation was. There was never a specific allegation. And on obstruction of justice, as we have said all the time, he didn't have a case. There's no case there. And we said it last week. Go ahead. You know, try to impeach an obstruction of justice. Go ahead. See how far this gets you. And, you know, this is when they were really talking last Friday about doing it. It sort of quieted down yesterday, the obstruction of justice thing. And we said, well, we'll see where that will be a week from now. And a week from now, that this was last Friday, will be, you know, this coming Thursday, this coming Friday,
right,
where it will be. And we're wondering whether it will just be a whimper and they're moving on to something else, because there is no obstruction of justice. There is no original crime, and there is no crime to obstruct justice. And that's what you're talking about. And as we have stated, and we agree with Dershowitz, who last week said, look, what you would be punishing is simply legal activities based on the intent. No original crime, all legal activities, and the special prosecutor or any prosecutor stating, well, I'm not punishing wrongdoing, I'm punishing the thought of a person.
Yeah.
Right. And Dershowitz is absolutely right when he states that. But that's why when I saw the craziness going on over the weekend, it just seems like, wow. But it really started dying down by the time we got, within, it was Easter, but then yesterday, you know, the Democrats, you know, held their conference and discussed impeachment and said, well, it doesn't look like it right now. And you and I figured that would probably be the case because it's a weak case. There is no obstruction of justice. And on the Comey case, well, he didn't do it, but what was his intent? Was his intent to do it? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I, you know, that it,
or excuse me, not Comey, on Mueller. He never fired, Mueller's he never, intent. Right, he never, right, he, right. He never fired Mueller, but but his intent was to for one day, but the next day it wasn't. So you take him on that one day and you charge him with obstruction of justice because he thought of what he thought of one day and not the next day.
Well, and I mean, we talked about how it would be impossible really to nail one thought down with this current president. That may have been their problem, but we know that the Mueller team reached out to the president's personal lawyer, and they were talking about then, what was your intent when you wrote this, when you were discussing this, when you were talking about this, what was your intent? Well, they were clearly looking to have something in writing, to have him admit that his intent was to obstruct justice. But that didn't go anywhere. And the Mueller report ended up being, I think, the perfect summary, even though it was hundreds of pages long, of this entire bogus thing to begin with. Think about how Mueller's team approached every single case. How many things have they bungled along the way, where it was clearly, purely politically motivated? From the 13 Russians to the approach, even going after Manafort, even the evidence that they had on Manafort. You had the judge, Ellis, talk about it, saying, this is very clear that if it weren't about Trump, we likely wouldn't be here today. But that's exactly what that report ended up being.
It ended up being a
bungled mess when they had zero to begin with, and at the end of it all, they still had zero.
And the only reason that you don't go, the only reason you don't suggest indicting the president for obstruction of justice, and you take a pass on that, is because of politics. that you don't want to have to make that decision, and you want to leave something politically hanging out there for the Democrats. But he never had obstruction of justice. He didn't have it. He knew it. And you know something? He didn't want to be the one to be responsible later on. Let's say that he said, and I believe that the president should be charged with obstruction of justice. And then it gets to that point where then he is impeached and then removed from office. And then it goes before a federal judge and he is eviscerated for the evidence that he uses to try to justify obstruction of justice. And he goes into the history books as being unfairly responsible for the removal of President Trump from office in a tainted and then a coordinated outfit. When we finally find out what happened, the entire thing of what happened inside the Obama administration, and he becomes part of the biggest scandal in American political scandal in American history. Mm-hmm. And I think he knew that. And so he knew he couldn't go the obstruction route, but he knew that he couldn't go the other route politically and be held in high esteem by the Democrats that for some reason he wanted to be, I believe, held in high esteem for no reason. But that's what it did. What it did was it kept the suspicion, and all along it's only been suspicion of Trump and nothing specific. They still can't identify the specific obstruction of justice charge. Think about it. Mm-hmm. What is it precisely? What is the obstruction of justice for? 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up, Elizabeth Warren, Democratic presidential candidate, and her plan to cancel student loan debt. Okay. We'll get to that coming up here.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I'm just reading editorial here, op-ed piece, Michael Graham, Boston Herald. Elizabeth Warren adding free college.
Yeah, right.
He calls her the Oprah Winfrey of American politics.
Mm-hmm.
As her polls have plunged into single digits, Warren has responded by treating the Democratic electorate like an audience at an Oprah show, desperately promising more taxpayer-funded prizes under every seat. You get a $1 billion program. You get a billion. You get a billion. And he lists off so far what she's agreed to. First, Medicare for all.
Yeah.
Right. $32 trillion over 10 years.
Uh-huh.
The Green New Deal, $1 trillion more a year.
Mm-hmm.
Her free child care program, $70 billion a year.
Mm.
Now, it's time to work with college kids and their parents with free student loan forgiveness at the low, low price of $640 billion. Add in the free tuition to public schools like UMass mm-hmm. and UNC. This is coming out of the Boston Herald.
Right.
And it's $1.25 trillion in spending. And who's going to pay for it? The super rich.
Of course.
And, of course, that's a lie. There isn't enough money for the super rich to pay for all the programs.
They just have money that just appears out of nowhere, right? Isn't that how it works with the... How many trillionaires do we have, Gary? None? Oh, okay. Because... I'm doing some simple math.
I'm trying to think. After the divorce, none?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, remember, he only owns 16% of his company.
Right.
And so, and now he'll own, 25% less of that, apparently, according to reports.
Look, this is the, whether it's Bernie Sanders and nobody on the left questions, because nobody really cares how it's going to be paid for, because we know how it's going to be paid for. Mm-hmm. If you get it, it's going to be paid in deficit spending, which means future generations will end up paying for it. And so it's a big lie to begin with. But when you look at it, I mean, there's just so many questions when you look at college loan forgiveness, which would be if you make under $100,000, $50,000 of your student debt gone. So they think roughly 42 million Americans, $50,000 would be gone, costing other taxpayers $640 billion. Now, are we being intellectually honest when we call it college loan forgiveness, or should we call it college loan burdens on Americans that didn't take out the loan? If we're going to be intellectually honest, should we actually be intellectually honest? Is what we're talking about student loan forgiveness, or in order to be intellectually honest, do you have to say we're going to have student loan forgiveness by having the student loan burden put on those who did not take out the college loans?
What's interesting is that they would likely, you know, of course, the idea would be to tax huge corporations, including the big banks, who are now not in the business of making college loans. Because the government took that over several years ago.
Right. But they would have to pay off any private sector loans that still exist, because people still have private sector loans from 15,
sure,
20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, and let's say somebody paid off their loan, like, you know, last month, finally got the last payment done. Well, do you give them $50,000?
Well, Michael Graham points out here, people that go to college make more money, and he mentions what Buttigieg said. He goes, wait a minute, because he's being, Buttigieg in this case was being intellectually honest, where he said, look, everybody's going to have to pay for this. Why should a high school student who didn't go to college be paying the college loans off
yeah,
for somebody who goes to college who's making more money? And the people that went to high school that are making less money, why should they pay that off? I mean, there's all sorts of interesting situations to bring up. Why should the student who took out $40,000 in college loans and flunked out in a year, why should their college loans be paid for by other people?
Right.
You know, it goes back to the ultimate one, and I brought this up in a political conversation over the weekend. And I said, you want to know who's getting screwed? The person who really gets screwed is the person in the middle class who's working two jobs, 80 hours a week, to provide for, you know, their family, but working 80 hours a week and having to pay a ton more, not only more in taxes because they make more, but a greater percentage of their income on that second job that they're working to try to ensure that they never become a burden on society. And what happens on the left is when you talk about all these free programs, what you end up doing is rewarding the people who are not acting responsibly and punishing the ones who are acting responsibly.
And that's been the game all along. The ones who go out and work harder, well, because ultimately, when it comes to unfunded mandates in the future, they will get to it. They've talked about it before. But at some point, they'll look at a means test. They'll run out of money for Social Security. They're going
right.
to. And
that came out
that,
over the weekend.
Right. And now you'll have this discussion of, well, wait a minute. This person also, you know, has over $1 million in their 401k. Well, they shouldn't get Social Security.
Right.
They paid into it. Yeah, but they don't need it.
Right.
We'll give it to somebody else who didn't plan.
Who didn't save, who didn't plan, who didn't do things right.
Right.
We bailed them out.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you'll give up everything you paid in because you did the right thing.
Well, we get this thing, well, I should have the right to go do what I want in college. No, you shouldn't. When you decide to go to college, you're talking about what you wish to do as an adult. We already cover, you know, when we talk about children, we cover their education. Mm-hmm. We all pitch in to cover their education, do we not? Mm-hmm. Should the public, who does not take out a college loan, be responsible for your choice of what you wish to do as an adult, education-wise? Should you have a right to go to the top college on somebody else's dime? I couldn't afford to go to a top college. I didn't have the money.
Right.
Did I have a right to go to a top college? No, there's no right to go to a top college. And that's the other point they're going to try to bring up. Well, education at higher universities is a right. No, it's not.
No, it's
maybe
not.
Maybe a goal. Maybe a good goal. It's something that I have contributed to particular scholarship funds that I personally believe in the sure. private sector.
Sure. Oh, what about the kids that study hard? Not even the athletes, the kids that study hard and get a full ride as a result of their hard work that they put in, that their parents helped discipline them to the extent that they worked really hard. Now they got their college, well, but they don't deserve any kind of help from the federal government, but you're giving the guy next door $50,000, according to Elizabeth Warren. So the hard work that you put in, you worked two jobs while you were going to college. That doesn't matter. You paid as you went along. That doesn't matter. Your efforts, we don't care about. You're not crying. See, that's the problem. People who do things responsibly don't cry enough. You people need to whine more. We need to get out there and cry more. We're not crying enough. The ones who whine.
I remember that the call we had from the young woman who was going to UCLA,
mm-hmm.
who said, yeah, but you don't understand. It's very hard to go to college and worry about that debt. And we asked, are you working? No, I can't work and go to college at the same time. Well, in order to accomplish great things, it's supposed to be hard.
There has to be sacrifice. That's the way it's always been. That's never changed. Yeah. That's not new. And quit pretending like it is. Because it's not.
I'm suffering more in 2019 than any other previous generation in the history of the world.
Yeah, no, you're just crying more.
It's tougher than it's ever been before, ever.
Yeah.
It's never been hard.
Right.
It was always easy, and now my generation, it's hard. I'm sorry, I had to whine properly for you.
Well, they cry. They cry. They're crying. That's all they're doing. They cry more. They don't suffer more. It's a crying contest. Shut it.
I mean, there is no right for you to sit there and rack up $100,000 or $50,000 in debt.
No.
For anything and say that anybody else should be responsible for it and responsible for the decisions that you made in your life. But I want it to be this. Well, then go ahead and work for it. There's no reason why anybody else should be responsible for the decisions that you make in your life. They should be your decisions and your hard work. And if people choose, as I've said, with private scholarship funds that I believe in, that I have donated to,
mm-hmm.
that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
In the private sector, they're, you know, that I've given to, they're merit-based, incentive-based, and there's a process that you go through. It's not across the board blanket. And in the private sector, that's fine. You should be able to do that.
Sure.
But this is across the board stating, and I, by the way, I chose to do it because I believe in it. This is a government stating you don't get to choose. You got to pay for everybody's education, irrespective of it. Well, no, it doesn't work that way.
No, it does not.
And you're responsible for what you decide to do with your higher education. You are responsible for the payment of it, and you're responsible for the work that has to be done in order to attain it.
Otherwise,
that's what happens in the adult world.
Otherwise, then why should anybody have to go 4 years or any time at all to a college? Just send everybody a degree. Why is it? What's the difference? The work that's put in. Oh, okay. Now we want to talk about people's work, their efforts,
and that,
how you earn something.
And that's why when I look at it and say, well, student loan forgiveness, let's tell the truth. It's student loan forgiveness on the burden of other people who did not take out and make that decision to take out that student loan.
You want to see bloated pricing at the college level for tuition, go ahead, start pumping in this kind of money. It's going to get stupid expensive.
Yeah, we don't learn, do we?
No.
You know,
no, we don't.
Look at, and Mark Cuban's brought up the college bubble. And when you make easy money available for college, the cost of college skyrockets.
Yep.
All the Democrats are saying, we need to make it more economically feasible. Well, you're not. You're raising the cost. And now if you do this, who are you raising the cost for? You're raising the cost for the person who isn't making the decision to go to that college.
Right. Who gets no benefit from it at all.
If you want to get in, we would love to hear from you. As you know, and I know the analysis is she's getting desperate, so she's offering everything, but that's what Democrats do. They offer everything. And now she's the point. I just love it. She's the Oprah Winfrey of politics. Everything is free. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Elizabeth Warren and her college forgiveness and free college now a proposal. What do you think about it? Let's talk to William in Illinois. William, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I have two quick items and a third if you would like. In case they should call it loan transfer, of course, since they're transferring the cost to somebody else. Further, if they go through this item, don't you think that the colleges and universities should take a haircut on the loans? And you can explain what that means to the people.
Well, you mean on the funding that they, future funding that they would get from the government, or the loans in the future that they would get?
The money that they're owed from the students, they can take a haircut on those loans.
Oh, I see. I see what you mean.
Okay. Yeah. Well, but the loans are from the government, not the colleges.
Yeah, the college, once the loan is approved and in place, that immediately is funded to the college, the university. But I could see.
I see what you mean.
Yeah. You could say going forward, you would have to get into tuition pricing control, and I haven't heard one Democrat include that in part of their, you know.
Never.
So, yeah.
Well,
no, thanks, but thanks, William.
Wouldn't that be the next, but no, that's a great point. Wouldn't that be the next thing?
Well, who's charging? Who is it that's charging tuition?
Why isn't any Democrat calling for tuition price controls?
Right. I think we should look into that. I mean, you had, Mark Cuban, as you just mentioned a moment ago, that has talked about it, the college bubble. We've all talked about it. Anybody with any logic whatsoever knows how to have that discussion and why the situation is what it is. It was the same with the housing bubble. You start putting money, too much money, into the hands of people that didn't earn it, didn't shouldn't have, and wouldn't have without Fannie and Freddie earned that loan. Then you start seeing the inflation of housing. You know, that's what we saw with that huge bubble. I don't know when the college tuition bubble is going to burst, but there's no doubt there is a bubble, because you're putting the money into hands of people who, at that point, think about that. They're not, the earnings potential might be there, but there is no guarantee. In what other equation is it like that? If you go buy a car, well, I'm not working yet. I'm going to work in 4 years. So start in 4 years, you guys can charge me.
No, it doesn't happen that way.
When I'm done with the car, right, then you can start, because then I'll have a job. Right now, I'm just going to cruise around town and look cool in my car.
Yeah, but that's the Cory Booker plan.
Yeah,
to make sure you have $50,000 by the time that you're 18.
Yes.
And therefore, then you can get a mortgage for your home and have a down payment for it.
Right. But that the problem
that's,
with...
That's one of the things that not only for college, mm-hmm. but you could put it on a down payment for a home.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
That...
Right. Sure. Sure. Old people, oh, we don't care about you. You're old. We don't care about you working all your life for this. No, no, no. We're going to give it to people... Here's the thing, is I criticized him on that plan, saying, "Well, wait a minute, you're talking to parents who believe that that's a good thing are waiting for 18 years to get the benefit of it." No, Mr. Booker,
right.
You need to write the check today. Here's your forecast:
strong to severe thunderstorms and heavy to excessive rainfall will be possible across the southern high plains and much of Texas through tomorrow. Above average high temperatures are expected across much of the country this week, especially in the west, and a sturdy ridge of high pressure builds and expands across that region. For the next 7 day period, the rainfall in central Texas and much of that state will be upwards of 5 inches. The coasts, Atlantic and Pacific, won't receive much in the way of rainfall this week. As we move through your day today, we'll see an elongated frontal boundary from Michigan down through Texas, delivering again heavy amounts of rainfall for Texas and Oklahoma. As you move up along the front, there's an area of low pressure that'll cause some unsettled weather in that region, with the potential later today and into tomorrow for some severe weather across the states of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios. The vast majority of Americans have no idea what we're talking about. Red Eye Radio.
Blah, blah, blah.
I'm Gary. He's Eric. And here's Elizabeth Warren over the weekend, or the long weekend. Mm. Keep forgetting it's Tuesday, uh-huh. not Monday. But long weekend for us, at least. Answering the question and announcing her plan to end the problem. Create problem for others. End the problem of students having to pay back their student loans.
Uh-huh. I, like so many other students, had to take out loans to pay for my education that I'll be paying off for years. What is your plan to deal with student debt and the rising costs of education?
Okay, thanks for the question, Dina. You know, this is the America we live in now. Basically, to get a shot at a middle-class life, you've got to have some post-high school technical training, two-year college, four-year college, maybe graduate school, depending on who you are and what you're ending up doing. The position of the federal government has been, good luck to you, you're on your own. The one thing they've done is they've lent tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, billions of dollars to our students, and it is now crushing them. So my proposal is to say this isn't right. What we have to do as a country is roll back that debt. And so I have two parts to the proposal. Part one is that we say that we are going to roll back student loan debt for about 95% of students who have debt. That's part one. And part two is to make sure that we never get in this mess again on student loan debt, and that is to make college universally available with free tuition and fees, and to put more money into Pell Grants so that students of color, so that our poor students have real access to college, and that we put some real money into our historically black colleges and universities. This is about opportunity for everyone.
There you go. Free everything.
All right.
And, of course, they love it. By the way, she will not be able to pay her student loans off for years. She's taking history.
Hmm.
Sorry.
Well, a history professor makes billions of dollars, right?
No, I'm sorry. If you wish to take history, go for it. If you wish to take history and wish for me to pay off your student loans, forget about it. Because if it's my son or daughter and they decide to take history and they decide to get hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt, that's on them. I'm not helping them.
Yeah, my
I'm going to say nope. If you're doing that, that is not financially a smart decision for you to make.
My two oldest both minored in history, because the oldest one is a huge history buff. So that was going to be a given for her. She is an executive with a company. Her major was a business degree. She's now an executive with a company and never once looked at it as this is going to be my way of going out and being productive and focusing on, in part, history. My kids knew, and they had to get themselves, you know, through college. They had to go through. They were both, in fact, working during their college years. Mm-hmm. They put college off, and then they went to college later. And, of course, I couldn't be more proud, but not once are they going to say that, and most reasonable people don't say it, that I made this choice and you need to pay for it. Somebody else needs to pay for it. The government needs to pay for it. Because no one with any critical thinking skills can apply those two and make them jive that I selected to do something and now you have to bail me out. It's those that just stick their hand out, they whine, they'll complain, they'll applaud in front of an Elizabeth Warren. But at the end of it, you start measuring. When you start measuring, okay, great, who gets what? What did you hear during Elizabeth Warren's statement just now? Well, she ends college for all. No, 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 no. If you break down what she was saying leading up to that, it was about, because it's not going to happen for the students who belong to an affluent family. It's not going to happen, no. You should go pay for yours. No, 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 no. We're going to, and then she starts talking about the free college and access, and then she slips a little with the, well, we, you know, poor families and minorities, and, well, wait a minute, you're either saying college for all or free college for poor people and minorities. Which is it?
The other thing is what she states of how to pay for it, she can't pay for it.
No, there's no way.
It's going to be future generations that pay for it. You're going to do it with deficit, you know, deficit spending.
Right.
Let's go to Don in Missouri. Don, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. I think that it might be a good deal for because of this, just the impact of all these young kids out there, and some of them they're out of college, and some of them are having kids now. And they're like $100,000 in debt for a couple or more.
Then why are they having kids, Don?
Well, that's the facts of life, man. I don't want to have to explain that to you. But
No. That didn't just happen to them. They're engaging in activity and behavior. And I'm supposed to be responsible because they did that?
You know, somebody's making a lot of money.
No, address his question. Address Eric's question. Don't change the topic. Why is somebody else responsible for somebody else's life's choices? If they decided to rack up $100,000 in school debt, and you said they're having children, why are they engaged in that behavior? And if they're engaged in that behavior to expand their family, why am I responsible or any of our listeners responsible for their life's choices? I didn't make the decision.
Listen, don't get all hot under the collar. Letting thousands Latinos over the border.
Okay, you're not going to answer the question. Right, we appreciate your call. You're not going to answer. You're gutless. You don't want to answer the question. You can't answer the question.
Because there is no logical answer to that question. You want to go do those things, that's great.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to pay the bill for it.
And we got hot under the collar, not maybe really hot under the collar, but we get a little bit passionate about it. Why? Because what you won't state is that you want somebody else to pay for your life's decisions. What you don't want to be responsible for your own life. So, yeah, call it hot on the collar if you want to. That philosophy that our hardworking listeners owe you something for your life choices, and you make it sound like it's just, well, just something that happens. People just go through life, and they have kids, and they rack up hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it's just, man, if you don't understand it, I mean, it's just things that happen in life.
Yeah, no, they just happen to you.
They just don't happen in life. They're the choices that you make. And your philosophy is for us to ask you that question and say, wait a minute, why is somebody else responsible? That is a justifiable question. That is a good moral question. And if your answer is it just happens and nobody is responsible for their own life except people who had nothing to do with the decisions that they made, that's why people get upset.
Right.
Because that's immoral to believe that somebody else should take care and be responsible for your life choices. You weren't talking about the poor there. You know what he was going to say? His argument was going to be, well, yeah, but we pay for illegal immigrants coming over the border. That was going to be his argument.
Mm-hmm.
That's the populist argument. We're doing something else wrong. Let's do something wrong over here.
All right, great. Let's build a wall. And also not pay for other people's college. Great. Solve those two problems. Next. Next. And this is it. This is the handout mentality. Oh yeah, we should do this. This is a good idea. It's a good idea. Great, you chipping in? You're chipping in the first 10,000, right? Let's go. Come on.
GoFundMe. We're getting back to those answers. So we bailed out the banks.
Yeah.
So it's time for the government to bail me out. And as our answer to that way back then was, we shouldn't have bailed out the banks, and we shouldn't bail you out.
Yep. Not going to do either.
Yes.
So in response to the last caller, okay, great. We'll build a wall, and we'll not bail out college loans.
Probably not the answer he wished to hear.
I'm guessing not. Tough. It's the only answer I got. Call me small-minded. Okay. Get in line with the people who do that. And you still can't explain why somebody else deserves my hard-earned money. You can't. Why do they deserve your hard-earned money? You see, here's the difference. Is people think, they always think they're not going to have to pay for it. That somebody else is going to pay for it. Well, you're insane if you think that. If you think they wouldn't have to hike the cost of all goods under this whole Medicare for all, college for all, free everything for all plan, you're simply not putting enough zeros in on your calculator.
I'm going to run as a Democrat. Free life for all.
That's right. Nobody has to do anything.
We're going to form the Free Life Party.
Yes.
Under my plan, life is free.
Yes.
Let's not worry about the details.
No paying for anything.
Everything is free. Ah, now we go to Ocasio-Cortez and the Star Trek life.
Exactly. Well, here's what we could do to make it fair, because everybody says, okay, free health care. We say, wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. You don't necessarily need health care every day, but you do need food, so free food for everyone. Oh, wait a minute. There's a means test, because we can't afford it for all, which means you go in and fill your cart. You've got to stop and pay. Your next door neighbor gets to fill their cart and walk straight out to the car. You get to watch while you're paying, while the number goes up and up and up and up and up, and you get to pay for it. Because you're paying now for yours and theirs.
So, actually, I thank the last caller because that was a great point that he made. They have $100,000, and they're raising a family.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got $100,000 in debt, why are you starting a family? Mm-hmm. Well, because these things just happen. Thank you so much, because you're making our point better. And we've said this at times. Sometimes those opposed to what we believe make the point better than we could ever make it. You just made our point.
Yep.
You made our point that, well, I'm not responsible for the things that I do. Things just happen.
Yeah.
Things just, we have no control over it. We take out money, we get married, and our sexual urges cannot be controlled.
Right.
And therefore we have children, and therefore you must pay for it, who had nothing to do with the decisions that we make.
Yes. Also, I need Netflix. So add another $12 a month to that bill. Why not? I should be entertained, too.
I think we should have the free, you know, the gimmeism. Gimmeism, the philosophy of the free life party.
Yeah. Let's do that. We don't need to pay for anything.
Socialism, capitalism, gimmeism is what we promote in the free life party. Everything is free.
Yes. You shouldn't have to pay for anything, honestly.
But you think about it. Is it Cory Booker with the $12,000 or $24,000 if you're a husband and wife, plus the $50,000 that you would eventually get if you're a child, that government funds would get, free college.
Mm-hmm. But see, here's the thing.
Free college, loan forgiveness. We are basically almost to the point of getting to the point of at least a significant portion of your life free party.
Well, because free that $50,000 18 years from now not isn't going to be worth enough. That's not going to be enough. I want free college and the free home, Mr. Booker. Not a down payment for home. I want the whole thing.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know something, I was telling you during the break, that the first thing I thought of when I saw that young student who was a history student in college asking Elizabeth Warren that, I have a degree in history and have, you know, years of debt that I have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
My first question is, I would have never been there asking Elizabeth Warren that question when I was in college. Why? I was working two jobs. The last thing I would ever think of is I need to go to a presidential debate or a presidential town hall forum to ask a presidential candidate how somebody else is going to pay for my college.
Right.
That mindset, that mentality never existed in me or anybody in my generation that I hung out with.
It
just didn't exist.
Well, the question, why isn't somebody else paying for my college? That wasn't there.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.